bank you need to get through the work you have to do. Meanwhile, though, you have more strategies at your disposal. Next is Rule 6. 21. Rule 6. Break it down and make it matter. If pictures, words, and feelings are too fleeting to keep you on track, Rule 6 is for you. Actually, we found that virtually everyone with ADHD benefits from following Rule 6. Difficulties sustaining attention and seeing past the present make it awfully hard to conjure up all the motivation you need internally. You need a little help from the outside. Fortunately, the possibilities for getting it are numerous and fairly easy to access. It's all a matter of bringing that oh-so-distant horizon into closer focus. But first, see if you can get a sense of why the future always seems so far away. What makes your destinations seem so distant? ADHD can make the future seem hopelessly distant. A goal that requires a significant investment of time, incorporates waiting periods, or has to be done in a sequence of steps, can prove so elusive that you feel overwhelmed. When that happens, many adults with ADHD yield to the temptation to find an escape route. Maybe you literally run away, going AWOL at work or calling in sick. Maybe you shift your focus from figuring out how to get the work done to figuring out how to shunt the responsibility to someone else. Maybe you've learned to act the class clown. Or you might have crafted other smoke screens to obscure the truth that you've made no progress and have no idea how to start inching forward. Feeling helpless makes some adults with ADHD regress to relying on a willing helper to cover for them by picking up the slack. Of course, none of these tactics helps you get done what you need to get done. And none of them protects you forever from others finding out that you haven't fulfilled your obligations. Better to figure out where you're stymied most and use external motivators appropriate for those situations. Do you panic or simply go blank when someone gives you a deadline so distant you can't even imagine that far ahead? Where does this typically happen in your life? Do complex projects overwhelm you? What types do you usually have to tackle? Do you have a lot of trouble working without supervision or camaraderie? Where and when? These are just a few simple questions to get you thinking about when you feel blocked from moving forward on a project or goal. Reading about the strategies you can use to provide yourself with external motivation may bring up more examples. Strategy. Break down longer-term tasks or goals into much, much smaller units or work quotas. It's so easy to lose sight of the end point of a project. If even an end-of-the-day deadline seems remote to you, you'll want to use this strategy for most work goals and some household goals. If you have a big project, like cleaning out all the closets in your house, or preparing next year's budget for your department at work, this strategy will be even more crucial, and you'll need to break the project down even further. In fact, the longer a project will take to complete, the more steps it's likely to involve. The further the deadline, the more essential it is to break it down and the smaller you need to make the chunks of work or other actions required. If a project has to be done before the end of the day, break it into 1 hour, or better yet, half-hour chunks of work. Write down what you need to get done in each period of time, and then run a highlighter over the step you're working on right now to keep your attention focused on that and off the rest of the units. If you have a project that has to be done by the end of the week, first figure out how much you need to get done each day. With something like closet cleaning, this can be as straightforward as assigning 1 day for each closet. If it's something more complex, where the tasks depend on each other, you may have to work a little harder to figure out the appropriate sequence of steps. If you're at work, ask your boss or mentor to help you. Use other people's reports of the same work from the past. The office files, electronic or paper, should help. Talk to friendly colleagues who have had to complete similar projects and see if their breakdown could work for you. Then look at the goal for each day and break it down into 1 hour or half hour segments. Or if, as is often true at work, you need to intersperse this project with others. Pick a time period to dedicate to this project. Write it into your day planner or the calendar on your desk. And then when the time comes, break that period into even smaller time segments during which you will complete each of the steps for a certain task. A classic example of this occurred during the Summer Olympics, when Michael Phelps, a young adult with ADHD, was showcased on TV, and the commentators were giving a lot of background about him. They showed his daily schedule, which was broken into 15-minute units, from the time he arose early in the morning until bedtime. It contained not just his planned training workouts for that day, but even how much time he would give himself to eat meals and devote to his favorite leisure activities. You don't necessarily have to plan your day to this degree, but it would help to plan your time at work just like Michael did, to help keep yourself focused on your goals and work assignments. So mark your day planner beforehand with how you plan to spend each hour of that work day. Then break that hour into 15-minute units, assigning each a micro-task you hope to do that is part of the bigger project in that unit. Doing this collapses what might seem like an endlessly long project into a series of quick-moving bites of time and accomplishment. Keep in mind that the breaks between these chunks of time are just as important as the productive periods. Don't be embarrassed to think of yourself in the same way you'd think of a young student with ADHD. You wouldn't expect a child to come home from school and do 30 math problems in one sitting. Nor would a good teacher expect that in the classroom. You ask the child to try just 5. When those 5 are done, you let the child with ADHD take a break for a minute or two. Then you give him just 5 more. 5 at a time is not overwhelming, even for someone with ADHD. But 30 can be. Just do 5 at a time. And do that 6 times in a row with short breaks in between, and you've got your 30 problems done. We all take baby steps toward any difficult goal. Why should you be any different? Strategy. Make yourself accountable to someone else. This strategy doubles your external motivators. Not only are you breaking down a complex or extended project into smaller tasks, but now you're bringing another person into the mix. Someone who will know whether you're doing what you set out to do. We are far, far more likely to follow through on the goals we set for ourselves if we tell someone else what we're doing and how we plan to do it, by chunking it usually, and then notify that person when we achieve each smaller objective. Most of us care a great deal about what others think of us, and this social judgment of others adds even more motivational fuel to our inner fires to get things done. At work, make yourself accountable to a supportive coworker, supervisor, or mentor. At home, use a supportive partner, spouse, roommate, or neighbor. Reward your helper. In the final strategy of Rule 6, you learn how important it is to reward yourself as an incentive to keep working toward your goals. Well, this goes for the person you're asking to help you stay on track, too. Thank and reward this person, so he or she doesn't feel burdened by this process. A helper who feels appreciated by you is likely to take satisfaction in helping you achieve your goals. That person is also likely to want to keep being your coach and mentor. Strategy. Give yourself little rewards as you accomplish each small objective. When we design programs for children with ADHD, we invariably give them points, tokens, poker chips, or some other reward for achieving the small work quotas discussed before. This, along with praise and approval, helps them get and stay motivated to finish drawn-out work assignments. The same applies to adults, except there is no teacher to dispense the points or rewards. You have to do that for yourself. We all do this. While writing this chapter, I told myself that if I wrote for 30 to 60 minutes and got 5 pages done, I would make myself a cappuccino in our nearby kitchen. Then, if I did another 5 pages or more, I could pick up my bass guitar, which I keep in my office, and practice. Yet one more time. A 60s rock tune I am trying to master. But just for a few minutes, one time through the song. If I wrote 5 more pages, I could have a Hershey's Kiss off the nearby coffee table, or a can of Diet Coke from my office fridge. Or I could just take a minute to appreciate the beautiful view from my second-floor office window across a tidal creek and marsh behind my home. Use whatever turns you on. The lesson here is the same. Give yourself brief little rewards for getting your small quotas done, and then, brick by brick, you'll be amazed at just how much work gets done across the longer term. That's how I wrote this entire book, brick by brick. Or, as Anne Lamott put it in her book on writing, bird by bird. Her brother had to write a class paper on birds, and could not get started. So their father told him to just write a few sentences on one bird, then come tell him about it, and so on, until the paper was finished. So, my friend, take it bird by bird. Stop briefly to note your success, and briefly reward it at the end of each bird. What small rewards could you easily give yourself? At work. At home. Elsewhere. Putting it all together. Okay, so you've broken your work into smaller quotas, chunking it all the way. Just as important as using smaller quotas to get bigger ones accomplished is what you do once each chunk or quota is done. Do at least these 4 things. 1. Congratulate yourself. 2. Take a short break. A few minutes. 3. If someone is available, tell him or her what you've gotten done. 4. Give yourself a reward or a taste of some privilege or activity you enjoy, but make it small and brief. All 3 of these strategies are going to help motivate you to get things done that you have not previously been able to finish, or to get to those longer-term life goals you really want to attain but never seem to get started on or complete. All are ways to artificially motivate yourself. When visualizing, describing, and feeling the emotions associated with completing a task are not enough to sustain your focus, chunk it. Make the goal in smaller quotas public. Take brief breaks. Reward yourself after each one. Rule 7 will give you more ideas for making the external world boost your internal motivation. 22. Rule 7. Make problems external, physical, and manual. If you typically get lost in all the possibilities when you try to mentally solve a problem, Rule 7 is for you. Because your verbal and nonverbal working memory capacities are weakened by ADHD, you probably find it challenging to hold all the relevant facts in your mind when presented with a problem to be solved. Weighing the pros and cons, listing the tools or materials you need, analyzing the merits of various approaches, figuring out risk and benefit ratios. All of these operations are difficult to carry out strictly in your head. It's not that you're incapable of logical analysis or you lack intelligence. Far from it. It's just that you need to make the process tangible and external to move through it smoothly and successfully. In essence, you need to be able to use your senses to oil the gears of your mind. You need visual aids so you can scan all the facts and questions in front of you. You need to be able to physically manipulate the information to make it real and manageable. You need to make the problem external, so that trying to solve it doesn't rely so much on your working memory, and so your emotions don't erupt with the frustration of trying to do it all in your head. Know where the most complicated or urgent problems come up in your life. This is a tricky assessment to make. What's hardest for you? The abstract problems that come up at work? Or the emotion-laden issues you have to deal with at home? Solving problems for yourself, or solving them for others? having to think on your feet, or having to systematically work through complicated options. Knowing where you're most paralyzed by problems will help you develop the external aids most likely to make your life easier. How successfully do you solve problems at work? Which ones are toughest for you? Budgeting, coworker relationships, teamwork, dealing with supervisors, other issues. How successfully do you solve problems at home? With your spouse or partner? With your kids? With siblings? With parents? How successfully do you solve problems in your social life? In dating? With friends? With neighbors and in community groups? How successfully do you solve practical problems? Repair needs, home, car, etc. Shopping. Dealing with store employees, etc. With vendors. Utility companies, credit card companies, etc. Know what kinds of external aids help you most. Most people have some sense of where their perceptual strengths are. For those with ADHD, who need to rely comparatively more on their senses to assist their thinking, it's important to know. What type of learner do you think you are? Visual. You need to see the material laid out before you to grasp it. Auditory. You need to hear it to have it make the most sense. Tactile. You need to touch it to get a full sense of it. Kinesthetic. You learn best by moving around in a physical activity. Do you remember what it was like for you to try to solve problems in your head when you were a child? Even the easiest mental arithmetic problems may have been impossible for you to do. If so, you probably also remember how demoralizing it was to be denied the use of beads or other tokens, because conventional educational wisdom said that by your age, you should have been able to do without them. Lots of people with ADHD have bad memories of experiences like that. Fortunately, you're an adult now, and no one can tell you what tools you're allowed to use to solve the problems that come your way. Our studies have shown that difficulty solving problems in their head keeps affecting people with ADHD as they get older, though in different ways. Young children may have trouble with mental arithmetic. They may not be able to recite backwards a string of digits read aloud to them. As they get older, they can't hold all the parts of a story in mind: characters, places, dates, actions, etc., as well as other adults, when asked to explain the story concisely or write a paper analyzing the story in some way. Our research now shows that this problem affects adults with ADHD just as much. You have dozens at your disposal. If they help you figure out where to spend your paycheck, how to talk your boss into a raise when company funds are tight, how to get a term paper done on time, how to keep the kids from bickering, or which home improvement project to tackle first. It's your obligation to use them. We're all supposed to develop verbal and nonverbal working memory during childhood so that we can retain and call up mental images, and so we can put words to what we've experienced. Later in our development, we should be able to take those mental representations apart, manipulate them, move them around, and recombine them in various ways. Doing so is critical to coming up with various options, solving problems, inventing various ways of doing or explaining things, generally developing plans for the future. Unfortunately, the problems ADHD causes in the brain rob us of the typical development of these executive functions. So how can you compensate? Try this. Strategy. Use physical external tools to solve problems whenever you can. Holding lots of information in your mind and manipulating it in various ways without losing track of anything is a pretty sophisticated ability. It also requires a fair amount of effort, energy, and concentration. Ask any adult who is trying to figure out how to squeeze a little more income out of the same old paycheck to fund braces or a new car, at the same time as refereeing a fight between the kids and trying to get dinner on the table, all after a 10-hour workday. Exhaustion has a way of making mental problem-solving almost impossible. I know many adults who take advantage of their computer to make lists, or use post-it notes or magnets they can move around on a board, audio tapes, graphic devices, and other tools to get the data out of their already cluttered minds and put it somewhere else where they can see it, feel it, hear it, or manipulate it. They use whatever it takes to give themselves a fresh take on the problem at hand. You can do the same. After all, you probably have the same demands on your problem-solving abilities, plus the interference of ADHD to deal with. Take all the help you can get. Once you have all the data pertinent to your problem in pieces, on paper, using objects, or graphically represented in some other way, you can move all that physically represented stuff around with your hands, your eyes, your ears, even your whole body, to see if a solution reveals itself. If it's a verbal problem, use paper, 3x5 file cards, or even a laptop computer with Word. Think of this as the advanced version of Rule 2. Rule 2 advised you to externalize something you need to remember by writing it down, posting it on a sign, or creating some other cue. Here in Rule 7, you extend the idea a bit further, externalizing everything you need to consider to solve a problem. Doing this can be as simple as doodling on a piece of scratch paper or sketching various parts of the problem as you think of them. There are lots of ways to make problems we're trying to solve physical in some way. Decorators make miniature two-dimensional furnishings and work with various room arrangements on a plastic form board in the shape of the room, house, or office. You can now buy computer software programs that let you do the same thing. Engineers and architects use simulators on computers all the time in designing roads, bridges, cars, or new chemicals, and solving physical problems of all sorts. Landscapers do the same sort of thing with miniature props or computer simulation programs. Carpenters, plumbers, tile and bricklayers, and people in other trades manually manipulate pieces of the problem to be solved to get the job done. After all, isn't that what blueprints are for besides just instructing us in building something? We can tinker with the design on the blueprint better than in our minds. If you have ADHD, odds are you'll be better at solving various problems or completing various mental tasks if you can get them outside of you, broken down into pieces, or in some other physical form that you can work with manually, in addition to mentally. Try it. And if those around you raise their eyebrows as they see you playing with these toys, invoke Rule 8. 23. Rule 8. Have a sense of humor. If you're still having trouble owning your ADHD, Rule 8 is for you. There's nothing like a little self-deprecating humor to help all of us accept our imperfections, get over any self-consciousness about them, and get on with the business and pleasure of living. All the preceding chapters of this book are a testament to just how serious a problem ADHD can be. You just know you are going to make mistakes, probably far more than most people. Having ADHD is certainly not your fault. So, what can you do about it? Besides everything you've learned so far, try this. Strategy. Learn to say with a smile, "Well, there goes my ADHD talking, or acting up, again. Sorry about that. My mistake. Now I have to try to do something about that next time." When you say this, you've done four very important things in a social situation. You owned the mistake. You explained how it may have happened. You apologized and made no excuses by blaming others. You promised to try to do better next time. Amazing what you can do with a few short phrases. Do those things, and you will keep your self-esteem and your friends and loved ones. disown your ADHD conduct, blame others, find excuses, and make no effort at trying to be better, and you'll be social toast. As we said in step two, know your ADHD, own it, and then work with it. You have to do these things if you stand any chance of mastering your ADHD. Just as I know I am graying and balding, colorblind, old, mechanically inept, and fashion impaired, you can know that you have certain executive function deficits because of how ADHD affects your brain. I don't deny my imperfections. I know them. I own them. I admit to them easily, and I work with them daily. That took time to do, but now they are no big deal, and they haven't been for years. I still remind friends of 32 years, whom I trained with as an intern in psychology, and they certainly still remind me of the houndstooth black and white leisure suit I once wore to a clinic at our medical school. And we all still laugh until we get tears in our eyes about what came to be known as a full Cleveland, because I accented the outfit with a white belt and white shoes. My wife will tell you repeatedly, with little encouragement, of how I once did a cartwheel into a large hot tub at a spa resort, in front of numerous attractive young ladies, as I tried to enter the pool without using the railing or stairs. So much for graceful coordination. And just don't ask her about all the stop signs I have nearly run, or actually missed, due to my colorblindness, when those signs were in front of green bushes. And what of all the public speaking, newspaper photos, professional videos, TV programs, and other public displays I have been involved in, that show my ever more balding and graying head, facial wrinkles, and those gold crowns that twinkle in the photo from the camera flash when I'm caught smiling. I own every last imperfection of them, and then some. So, I like who I am, warts and all. I want to be a part of life. I have goals yet to achieve, and I intend to live this life as fully as time and opportunity permit, nonetheless. So should you. We want you to take much the same attitude toward your ADHD. You have it, so you might as well own up to it. And, whenever appropriate, laugh about it. It may be appropriate to laugh at yourself apologetically with others. It's almost always appropriate to have a private laugh at yourself. If you make ADHD a serious, all-encompassing disability, it will be, and that's the way others will treat it, and probably not want to spend much time with you. If you approach it with a sense of humor, they will too, and you can laugh with them about it, and about their imperfections too. They'll probably end up wanting to spend more time with you as a friend. Most important, though, you'll be able to live with yourself, with all your imperfections and all your struggles, to deal with a condition that's not easy to live with. Treatment won't cure it, or even address all of it. And therefore, ADHD is most likely going to be with you for the rest of your life. So get used to it, and smile about it once in a while. To help you remember these 8 everyday rules, copy them down, and tape these rules to your bathroom mirror. I did this for years with Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I know many others who did the same, until they had memorized and could easily recite those fantastic principles for leading a productive, effective, and purposeful life of integrity. So, put these 8 rules where you can see them every day, even keeping a second copy on your desk at work, another in your day planner, another taped beside your computer monitor, and copies in other places you are bound to be looking at repeatedly each day. Rule 1. Stop the action. Buy some time before you respond. Rule 2. See the past, and then the future. See what's coming. Rule 3. Say the past, and then the future. Analyze before deciding. Develop rules for the future. Rule 4. Externalize key information. Rely on something besides your memory. Rule 5. Feel the future. Stay motivated. Rule 6. Break it down and make it matter. Bring the future a lot closer. Rule 7. Make problems external, physical, and manual. Simplify problem solving. Rule 8. Have a sense of humor. Accept your imperfections and get on with your life. Step 5. Change your situation. Mastering ADHD in specific areas of your life. Take a quick look at the bar chart on the next page. It shows that adults with ADHD reported being impaired in every area of life, much more than adults without ADHD. These findings are probably no surprise to you. Self-control and a sense of time are critical to everything you do, everywhere you go. When they are hampered by ADHD, you feel it in every aspect of your daily existence. Some activities and situations may be harder for you than others. If so, you might want to start Step 5 by listening to the chapters on the domains where you have the greatest ADHD-related difficulties. Or skim the chapters to see what they have to offer. You'll find a wealth of practical ideas for handling the specific demands of specific settings, all flowing from the rules in Step 4, all targeting the unique deficits associated with ADHD. 24. Education. My teachers in school were always telling me to read the directions on my school assignments carefully, so I would know exactly what I was supposed to do. But oh no, not me. I would always just lunge right into the work, figuring that I had a pretty clear idea of what I was to do. And so I would get a lot of my assignments wrong. I just could not seem to slow down and take the time to read the directions. I just wanted to get the work over with as fast as possible. I initially failed out of college for not doing my coursework. So I worked for 3 years, and then I returned to a community college and got my associate's degree. I finally transferred back to my original university, gaining acceptance back into the engineering school, from which I hope to graduate this year. But even that is not guaranteed, because I still had these unfinished papers to turn in for classes that already ended. There's probably nothing harder for people with ADHD than getting an education. That goes for both children and adults. ADHD impairs academic performance. It leads to behavior problems in school, and it reduces the number of years of education completed successfully. I may be giving you information you've already gathered firsthand. If so, you probably also already know that lack of a good education has a lot of downstream effects. It lowers your earning potential, both annually and across your lifetime. It limits your choice of occupation. It can influence the kinds of friends you may have and the social circles in which you participate. It can leave you with low self-esteem, which can further hamper your social life. Now that you're on track toward changing your destiny, you may find that you want to go back to school. If you don't have a high school diploma or a college degree, perhaps you've decided to get a GED and/or enroll in college. With the help you get from medication, you may feel confident that you could complete a training program, seminar, workshop, adult education program, or continuing education course to give your career a boost. Or maybe you're a young adult and still in the midst of your higher education. Coming up, I'll share a lot of practical tips for being as successful as you can possibly be, whatever your educational goals may be. But first, you might benefit from having some idea of what you're up against, so that you're prepared to seek any accommodations or assistance you might need. Why devote time and energy to education without giving yourself the best possible chance to succeed? Know what you're up against. You can enhance your educational achievements through a number of routes, from medication to accommodations provided by the school to self-help strategies. Your best bet for targeting the aids tailored to meet your unique needs is to know as much as you can about your own abilities. Have you had ADHD since childhood? If so, you've been struggling in school from the start. My colleagues and I have found that adults with ADHD who were diagnosed as children tend to have done worse in school than those diagnosed as adults. Why? It's hard to say for certain, but here are some possibilities. Some people who have gone through childhood without a diagnosis or treatment may have milder ADHD than those diagnosed at an early age. Those who managed without treatment may have had superlative individual support from parents and teachers. In some cases, high intelligence can compensate for ADHD symptoms in school, just enough to make the adults in a child's life think a diagnosis is unnecessary. For these reasons, a child might remain undiagnosed and might be comparatively more successful in school than diagnosed children. When those children grow up, they often end up seeking help for ADHD. By adulthood, parental support is no longer available to the same extent. And as you heard in step one, the symptoms affect domains of life where intelligence can't overcome impairments. So the adult gets tired of trying to manage life with untreated ADHD symptoms. So if you were diagnosed as a child, you're probably facing more obstacles than if you were diagnosed recently. If your ADHD was relatively severe, you're dealing with greater deficits to begin with. On top of that, problems in school tend to build on each other over time. Both your performance and your self-confidence may have dropped over the years. It's important to know that, so you can seek the degree of assistance you need to achieve your educational goals. In recent research, my colleagues and I found the following in studies examining the educational history of both people diagnosed as adults and people diagnosed as children. The information on those diagnosed as adults came from the reports of people who knew them well as kids, mainly their parents. The information on those diagnosed as children came from the study I did with Mary Ellen Fisher, Ph.D., that followed children with ADHD in Wisconsin into adulthood, average age 27 years, at which time they still had the disorder. School outcome. Graduated from high school. Adults with ADHD, 88%. Children with ADHD as adults, 62%. School outcome. Graduated from college. Adults with ADHD, 30%. Children with ADHD as adults, 9%. School outcome. Retained in grade. Adults with ADHD, 25%. Children with ADHD as adults, 47%. School outcome. Received special education. Adults with ADHD, 35%. Children with ADHD as adults, 65%. School outcome. Received other assistance. Adults with ADHD, 48%. Children with ADHD as adults, 42%. Do you have learning disabilities? A substantial minority of adults with ADHD also have specific learning disabilities, LDs. A learning disability is a delay in a specific area of basic academic skills, such as reading, spelling, math, and reading comprehension. You heard in step two that the executive function deficits of ADHD can cause reading comprehension problems. But these problems are more striking in some people than others. If you score below the 14th percentile on standardized tests, you will be said to have a specific learning disability. We know from research that these learning disabilities are more common in adults with ADHD than in the general population. We found particular problems in not just reading comprehension, but also listening comprehension. Whether you qualified for a specific LD or fell just below that cutoff line, it's not hard to see how challenging learning would be if you couldn't grasp or retain what you'd read or heard in the classroom as well as your peers. A learning disability could also have a negative impact on your social life if others didn't realize you were having trouble understanding what they were saying and misinterpreted your reaction as disinterest in them. Fortunately, even if any learning disabilities you may have were not addressed when you were a child, you can get targeted help for them today. The same studies cited before showed that adults diagnosed with ADHD as children had more learning disabilities than adults diagnosed as adults. School outcome. Diagnosed learning disorder. Adults with ADHD, 28%. Children with ADHD as adults, 45%. Lay the groundwork for learning. The vast majority of adults with ADHD have experienced problems in their educational history. Besides the figures quoted before, our study showed that adults with ADHD were more likely to have been punished at school. 42% among those just diagnosed, a whopping 62% among those diagnosed as kids. They had more problems with others at school, 44% and 53% respectively. A huge 71% of adults diagnosed as children had been suspended or expelled at least once. Obviously, you're not looking to repeat that kind of experience. Yet you're likely to have problems again if you're pursuing adult education classes or workplace educational programs. You can do yourself a big favor by knowing what you can do to get around those problems. Your right to reasonable accommodations. If you're still in college, you'll probably need certain accommodations to help you succeed, and you should have them. You're entitled to reasonable adjustments to your educational activities, as provided under the Americans with Disabilities Act. You may want to become familiar with the requirements for documenting your ADHD to your college, if you wish to take advantage of these reasonable accommodations. Please keep in mind, though, that this law exists to help you help yourself. No accommodations can do the hard work of learning for you. So assert your right to accommodations, but don't stop there. Always be prepared to do whatever you can for yourself. You'll do much better in school if you do. And what you learn from helping yourself will transfer to every other setting you function in, from work to home. Learning the 8 Everyday Rules for Success. Following the rules laid out in Step 4 is one big way to help yourself. In educational settings, these rules should be your Bible. Medication. In all honesty, experience and much research tell us that self-help recommendations like these rules are often not enough to master the adverse effects of your ADHD at school. If you've been coasting along without medication, but are considering going back to school or starting a challenging job, now is the time to reconsider this treatment. ADHD medications are the most effective way to begin to address the school and workplace problems that ADHD poses for most adults. You'll probably find the long-acting ADHD medications most useful, since they can manage your symptoms for 8 to 14 hours with only one or two doses a day. You may benefit from supplementing a single dose of the long-acting medications with a second dose of an immediate-release pill late in the day or in the early evening. Find a coach or mentor. This is someone to whom you can make yourself accountable every day for the work you believe needs to get done that day. This can be a teacher, professor, roommate, classmate, more senior student, or someone in the special student services office. If possible, meet with your coach twice a day for 5 minutes. Use the first meeting, usually in the morning, to review your to-do list or goals for that day. Then meet again late in the day to show your coach what you've accomplished on that list. Identify the college ADHD liaison. This person, who usually works in the special student services office, can do the following for you. Review your documentation that you have ADHD. Describe the types of curriculum adjustments and other accommodations typically provided to students with ADHD, so you can identify the ones you might need. Work with your professors to see that you get them. Link you up with psychologists, counselors, and physicians, usually psychiatrists, who work at the Student Counseling Center. Get tools that can keep you on track before you begin. Use a daily assignment calendar to set goals for each day and track appointments. You'll use this calendar to review the day's tasks with your coach, and also keep it in a visible spot to remind you to stay focused on your goals and appointments. Use your journal to write down everything you need to do, including assignments, individual requests made of you by teachers, meetings you've scheduled, promises you've made or that others have made to you, anything of the slightest importance. Review this journal several times a day to make sure you're doing the things you have recorded here. Get a notebook organizing system and day planners, and use a personal data assistant, such as a BlackBerry, too, if it will help you stay organized. But be aware that BlackBerries, iPhones, and other such devices can also be incredibly distracting and markedly reduce your productivity due to text messaging, email, or just fun surfing the internet. Think twice about using them. They don't always help distractible people. Buy separate colored folders for each class where you can keep your completed assignments. It's not unusual for adults with ADHD to do assignments and then misplace them and not be able to turn them in on time. Get a tactile cueing device that can provide frequent prompts to keep you focused on the work at hand. One possibility is the Motivator, a small plastic box about the size of your cell phone that holds a vibrator and a digital clock that can either be set for any interval you wish or set to random intervals so that it vibrates unpredictably. Tips for success. Scheduling smart. Schedule harder classes, meetings, work in your peak performance time slot each day. For most people, this may be the mid-morning or early afternoon, but people vary in the time of day when they're most alert. Some research shows that adults with ADHD find afternoons or even evening hours their best time to focus and concentrate, which is a few hours later than for adults in the general population. In any case, know your daily cycle of arousal and alertness, and use that knowledge to schedule those tasks that require more concentration and effort into that time slot. Alternate required or harder courses with elective or fun classes during the day, or across the weekly schedule of your classes. You don't want to stack up all the hard classes on a single day or during the first few days of the week, as this can overtax you, make you too tired to do well in them, cause you to lose interest or motivation partway through them, and ruin your attitude toward school. Interspersing the hard stuff with classes or activities you find more interesting or entertaining ensures that you're never faced with too many classes or projects that demand lots of effort too close together. You can do this at work as well by arranging your work that day so that you alternate difficult and demanding with easy and interesting tasks on a given day. Getting the most out of classes. Tape or digitally record important lectures or meetings, or use the SmartPen digital recorder. Get any extracurricular materials your teachers may have available, or have set aside at the library especially for their classes, such as videos that supplement what you're learning in class, and additional notes or articles that further explain the topics that are being covered. Some adults with ADHD in college settings have been able to get assistance with note-taking in class if their writing problems are particularly severe. One way to stay awake, alert, and focused is to do something more active while you have to pay attention. If you have to write down the gist of what is being said in a lecture, you are more likely to stay attentive than if you just sit and observe. So take notes continuously, keeping your hand moving, even if you don't really need to write down the information. Exercise before exams or boring classes. Routine aerobic exercise, improves a person's ability to concentrate for 45 to 60 minutes more than usual following the exercise. Learn to build in brief exercise breaks throughout your day, especially before you have to do something that you find difficult to concentrate on. Just 3 to 5 minutes of exercise may be enough to help you concentrate better. If the class is long enough that you're being given beverage or restroom breaks, use them to do some quick aerobic exercise, even if it's just faster than normal walking outside the building or in the hallway. Handling homework. Use your computer rather than writing out papers and other assignments by hand. People with ADHD often have motor coordination or other handwriting problems that make handwriting slower and less legible. In college, you may also be able to tape or digitally record some of your assignments and turn in that CD or audio tape as your report if you have a history of significant writing problems. The Special Student Services Counselor mentioned before can get you this type of curriculum adjustment with your teachers if you require it. If you have lots of reading to do for school or work, learn to use the SQ4R method for reading comprehension. Here briefly is how it works. Survey the material to be read. Just leaf through it quickly to get some idea of how much is to be read, how it is broken up, and so forth. Draft some questions that need to be answered from what you are to read. Often these are at the end of the chapter to be read, or have been given to you by your teacher. Now use the four R's. Read just one paragraph, recite out loud in a soft voice or whisper what was important in that material, write that material down in your notebook, then review what you just wrote. Do this for each paragraph. This not only makes you review what you're reading four times per paragraph, read, recite, write, review, but also gives you frequent mental breaks as you shift your concentration at the end of each paragraph from reading to reciting to writing to reviewing across the assignment. As you get good at this, you can read longer passages, such as 2 paragraphs at a time or an entire page, before engaging in the recite, write, and review steps. This is a great strategy for people with working memory problems. Passing the test. Should you request extra time on timed tests? Many young adults with ADHD in college settings believe or have heard from others that this may be a useful accommodation to request. But what little research there is on the subject is not that clear. Everyone, disabled or not, seems to benefit from extra time to take timed tests. But that does not mean it will necessarily help compensate for your ADHD or solve your problem with taking these tests. More recent opinion suggests that you're better off using a method called time off the clock. This involves using a stopwatch to take these timed tests. With this stopwatch, you will not get any more time to take the test than do other students, say 1 or 2 hours. But what you are allowed to do is to stop the watch any time you like, as often as you like, to take a short break of 1 minute or 2. Use this to stand up, stretch, walk about the room or into the hallway, get a drink of water, use the bathroom, then return to your test and start the stopwatch. When you've used up all the test time on the stopwatch, you're done. Yes, this will result in your taking more time than others to complete the test, but you're not given more active work time. The strategy that you're using is the point here, breaking up the test into smaller work quotas and having frequent breaks to briefly refresh your mental focus and concentration. Take timed tests in test settings that are free of distractions, or offer greatly reduced chances of being distracted. The healthy student. Besides contributing to your overall health, the following 2 suggestions can enhance your academic performance. 1. Watch the caffeine and nicotine use. You're more prone than other students to use these substances and become dependent on them. Adults with ADHD sometimes try to self-medicate their disorder using readily available caffeine-containing beverages or tobacco products. Yes, caffeine and nicotine are stimulants and can help people be more alert. But caffeine especially works on the wrong brain neurochemicals for people with ADHD and can, in moderate or high doses, be counterproductive, making you less focused, more jumpy and jittery, more nervous, and more likely to need to urinate frequently. You are better off using a prescription ADHD drug than trying to use caffeine-containing substances or over-the-counter pills that contain the substance. And while nicotine may benefit your ADHD symptoms to some degree, you're using a highly addictive drug to self-medicate, one that is only going to increase your addiction to this chemical, not to mention increasing your risk for pulmonary and heart disease and cancer. Again, use a prescription ADHD drug instead that does not carry such risks and works just as well or even better. 2. Develop a regular weekly exercise routine. 3 or more times per week for increased attention, better health, stress management, and so forth. Regular routine physical exercise, done 3 to 4 times per week, even for just 20 to 30 minutes each time, is good for anyone's health. But if you have ADHD, it also seems to be of particular benefit in further controlling your symptoms or compensating for them. So whether it's running, biking, weight training, dance classes, using your favorite gym equipment, treadmills, elliptical trainers, stair climbers, etc., or some mixture of various types of exercise, you, more than most people, need to be doing routine physical exercise. An extra boost. Try some peer tutoring. This is where you and a fellow student agree to study together and alternate teaching each other the material. One of you is the instructor, the other the student. Then reverse these roles with each tutoring session. Work as a team with more organized people. Working around or with others who do not have ADHD can keep you better focused on the work and more publicly accountable for doing that work than going solo. Find a fallback college classmate who will fill in if you've forgotten an assignment or other important information. Swap phone and fax numbers and email addresses so that you can get the lost or missing information quickly when you find yourself in a jam. Attend any after-class help sessions that are given. Many teachers are willing to set aside extra time to help people who need more instruction. Take teachers up on these offers, even if you don't really need the assistance. The extra review will help with your forgetfulness, and it will also show you're motivated, which will make a better impression on your instructors. Schedule faculty or advisor review meetings often, every 3 to 6 weeks. Remember that the more often you're held accountable for your work, the better you'll do. 25. Work. I was so active as a child. My teachers used to tell my mother to just keep her busy, because I was always getting into things if I was left alone or without anything to do. I still find it very difficult to stay seated for very long, especially during boring meetings or when I have to do work that doesn't interest me. I just have to be doing something, and if there is anything more interesting or fun to do than the work I've been assigned, I'm likely to get distracted by it and find myself not getting things done on time. I have to put in 5 to 10 times more effort at work to do what other people seem to do easily. By the end of the day at work, I'm exhausted and haven't accomplished half of what other people seem to have done that day. Yet I seem to be more tired than they are. What's with me anyway? I'm in my mid-30s and have a long-held belief that I may be affected by adult attention deficit disorder of the predominantly inattentive type. I've long suffered a feeling of being different, a feeling that something is not right with me. For a while, I thought I may have ADHD, but I'm not fidgety or restless. though I find it very difficult to concentrate and focus on any kind of task assigned to me. While this resulted in much lower grades than I believed I was capable of in school, and a feeling that I was just not that smart, it has affected me in a much more serious way during my working life. I am very disorganized, frequently make